And the last thing I wanted to say is that I have a complete down-up on traffic engineers. You know, they are out of the net at this stage. They have to be brought in. You know, streets are for us. You know, streets have to be converted back to plain. You know, I mean, we should be encouraged to set up traffic limits. And the guy down the road has to park his car at the end of the street, or move very, very slowly, or take a bolt when the kids are playing. You know, we really actually have to bring the roads fully into the equation. You know, on the other hand, I think, you know, we should be looking seriously at a corridor through this country, which actually takes a whole number of services, like rapid transport, the ability to actually move cars with it and trucks within 500 millimetres from each other in the future, take our electricity, take our infrastructure on one corridor. We seem to have all the people involved in infrastructure working on different corridors, so you don't actually see the person in that overhead transport moving five times faster than you. And so we really need to rethink the big picture. And the only other people I'm going to have a down on is real estate agents, and you know why I'm always going to have a down on them, because they will be the parasites of our community. So, and the things that we do wrong. So, that's it. That is just a short few words I'm going to say, and I hope I've introduced some things which are quickly where we might go.
Thank you very much. Let's have 10 minutes of discussion. People welcome to ask questions, respond. Maybe if you could give names, that would help you. So I actually haven't really realised how many iconographic buildings you've done here. So that's lovely to play. Questions, comments?
Rosemary, could you have some sets you found? When I was doing some of my research work in the past, I remember looking at, you know, the developments of the State Council and the different models of Dr. Peter Fraser, and one of them was a high-rise apartment kind of thing. And he said it was rubbish. And so there's very strong ethos within New Zealand society with that suburban section, the idea of the rural within urban and having, you know, having a quarter acre kind of section. And that still remains even though it's kind of changing a bit. So you try to fight against the long standing kind of belief and everyone having their own land within New Zealand.
I don't believe it's as strong as you actually think. When you research existing situations, you come up with conclusions which are based on those existing situations. And what people enjoy really is their own private space, and that's each individual. And they enjoy at certain times the public domain, and they enjoy the transition between private and public space. So it's that in-between realm which is more important than one side or other. You know, once someone is not conditioned, but once one is put in an area which actually has a party wall and no windows facing the neighbour, and a fenced yard, they will find it just as satisfactory as the suburban house which actually points the windows at each other through a short distance. We have got some very, very poor land management and land planning. We subdivide a lot of land without putting housing on, and therefore people find themselves in situations which they take on subconsciously. And a lot of people take on the relationship which have existed most of their lives to actually sort of set their standards. You know. And another one which is really important is the picture theatre mentality, where the people in front get the best view and the people behind get the worst. You know, so some of those norms which we've usually had are hard to get come away from. But you know, I mean, 25 years ago, my mum used to give us chicory and coffee in a bottle, you know. And now I'm very discerning on what coffee bar I go to because of the quality of coffee. It really is giving people those differences. No one's brave enough to do this, you know. I mean, I have a house which is probably the forerunner of leaky homes. If they've given me one thousandth of what they gave brands in that period when they made so many mistakes by assessing materials in the centre rather than the connections, you know, we wouldn't have had any leading homes and used backers for research. So it is really important to, you know, find experiment. I have a house that has, you know, and it's just adjoining properties have 16 or 17 people living in them, and I have 40 people working out of the suburban house. I don't have planning approval, that's by the way. It's not important. You know, and most people don't mind being there and being on the wet, the windy day, but that's in a wet day. But, you know, I mean, I think it is important to actually sort of make those changes, provide examples where people feel better about where they're going to live, and find that closer situations they can do far more than some of these vast suburban situations which we have to deal with. Currently, I have, for one of my challenges, working on Tamaki East, you know, or just thinking about Tamaki East, you know, it's so difficult to actually know where to start. And the only place to start in Tamaki East is on the edges. You have to get some of those solar mothers with their five kids out to the edge of the place to give them a position where they can actually start making up their own minds. In the centre of that difficult suburb, it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. And, you know, I mean, Housing New Zealand has started. They chose five sites in the centre of that settlement. Now, back to two. And one of them is right in the Panmure town centre, which is great. But, you know, I mean, they spend a lot of money in just analysing the sites, but you actually have to start with edges and start working through. I mean, edges are really important. It's where you actually understand the differences fairly quickly and you can assimilate with them. I've had four uncles, retired farmers, who have always opted, when they retire, to live on the edge of a town looking out. And I think that's really significant. We don't provide that space for them. You know, they finish up in suburbia, doing the gardens for everyone else in the city. But, you know, I mean, I think we will change much quicker than you think.
I'll just say that strong ethos has been in the background. So I agree with you that it is changing. It seems to me that there's people wanting to live in apartments. I mean, I know these people are now, you know, wanting to have this.
Yeah, and I mean, what's happening in Wellington is that people who now live in apartments are buying upgraded apartments and some are going back to the suburbs. That's absolutely fine, that's the change you make. But some of those people are now living in apartments. They would have been out at a retirement village at Ramaki or somewhere else if they hadn't got any closer apartments, because they have a support system within those apartments which is much better than they would have out at Ramaki. So that is important, you know. And I'm not saying that apartment is the right model, I'm just saying that providing differences, acceptance of space, you know, orientating houses, which when the sun comes up in the morning, it comes up in the east and goes anti-clockwise to the west. There are so many houses built in this country where the sun seems to go clockwise, you know, and you know, the view has become so important that the houses are damn cold, or they have to use triple glazing the hell of a lot of heat. You know, we're siding houses really badly, we're modelling them really badly, or we're using poor land use, which is really important. None of these come up in sustainability. None of those issues come up in sustainability. You talk to the Department of Building and Housing, I say, what's your land use policy? And where the sun comes up. And one of the senior executives said, well, do we have a policy on where the sun comes up and land use? And the answer was, oh, the Department for the Environment deals with that subject. So it is really important. Yeah.
Rob, out of here. What's your view about the city as a walking place? I mean, you emphasise the need to meet people, and myself, I'm an advocate for the promeneur. Tell us about the pedestrian spaces and the squares and so on that you'd like to see in the city for a modest sized town.
Yeah, well, gradually we reduce the reliance on cars in a denser city. So that's fine, and it takes a long period. The first thing that we should look at seriously is one-way traffic systems, because they tend to make people go faster, you know. And, you know, I'm two minds about running a bus through Mammoth Mall, for instance. You know, I mean, I don't know whether that's right, but I'm also in two minds of whether you don't have other cars, so the buses, if I go back, I run into them. You know, I mean, that's so important. So there are traffic engineers now around the world. One, and not traffic engineers, is the mayor in North Germany, who's actually was a traffic engineer 25 years ago and put in 72 traffic lights. He's pulled them all out, and the traffic goes a lot slower. You know, and you know, because they're unaware of what speed is traffic. So what we really actually have to do is actually make people adjust to that mix between cycles, pedestrians, traffic. And finally, you know, there are areas where you eliminate the car completely. But one of the great things about cars is people coming in the city, and especially Wellington, of course, if they come in with two cars, they quickly eliminate one, and then they get down to half a car, which is really interesting. So, you know, people living in cities can actually change the whole way that cities work. So pedestrians will feel more comfortable. And the best park in Wellington is Midland Park. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for Midland Park, if you settle there, you can move away from it in any direction you like. And that's the good thing about a great park. Small parks in the city, you can move away in a different direction that you came without actually having to give an explanation. Simple sort of point, and where the waterfront is great on a fine day, dreadful on a wet day, and should actually have some things which challenge the edge. I'm a great fan of jetties, for instance. You know, jetties are great for focusing activity, both from the sea and for the communities. I mean, one of the places which we have some interest in is the Abel Tasman National Park. And one of the great things to do now, and it's Dan Hart's going to stop on anything, is to have some jetties on those places where the activity is totally focused, where those people will protect those beaches, which are absolutely beautiful. You know, and so the footprints change the way that people feel about land. You know, and I feel strongly about the foreshore and seabed film, but it's not about a plan diagram, it's about section. It's coming from the water up to the land, or coming from the land down to the water. And it's about security, safety, catching of food, preparation of food. And if it's thought about a section, then the opportunities change quite strongly, you know. And accessibility is extremely important to everyone. But it's down there. If you take a dog out for a walk, great example, runs into the water, gets wet, comes out, shakes itself. It doesn't walk along the beach like you've always taken. It's a very natural movement to get into the water, come out, check yourself, and move up to the dry land. So very much about section, and it's about those tributaries, which are those small streets between Gilbert's Quay and Lambton Quay. They are the first ones you start pedestrianising, and the quality of activity on those streets is changing. It's changing already, which is really great. No one's actually said, we're going to make great places of them. All they're doing is encouraging it to happen, but it is happening, and then Jewish people have to give up as a fast lane.
Last question, and then we'll move on to the next issue.
2.3, one of the great development opportunities of Wellington, apropos what you're talking about, is Shelley Bay. What do you do with Shelley Bay?
Well, I confine it to Shelley Bay in one thing. You know, it should not spread up the hill to the prison. You know, I mean, I think it's a great area to provide examples where how you deal with the edges are really important. And I suppose it's a very, very good example to actually restore some of the historical qualities of it, but also allow a level of sediment to happen where people can learn by something which is different. It's not about conservation. It's not about not having anyone live there. You know, living on edges is very, very important. So many people can live on edges, and they do it well. The people who can't do it well, shove them back into the suburbs. and there's a great green belt around it. So Shelley Bay will work like a great small town, you know. And there are great small towns which we have managed to bypass and save them, like Agra and Russell and Rawini and places like that, where the roading system has been controlled and the access down to the edge is a lot more natural than what actually happens in some other places. So, Shelley Bay is a great example. You wouldn't increase the size of the road around it, you'd actually encourage people to visit there slightly differently, of course.
I think it raises a really interesting issue that we've had a great seminar about, planning another book about the role of treaty settlements and iwi and the Tempest Tribes and Matapato and Auckland and Kaitahu about what role they have working with city councils to actually shape the city and making them have some maritama about it. I'm sure we could continue for another half an hour, but with some trepidation I'm going to ask Ian to launch our book and say a few words about that, and then we're going to break, people can move around and also say the forms can. So this, I should just say to Dan, More Matter was a book that was funded partly by the council, partly by the Health Research Council, an attempt to understand the science and the health behind leafy buildings, and it's had a long gestation, and I'm delighted that a number of the my co-editor is Judy Bennett is there, and there's a number of the people who've written articles in it. Bjorn Dews, who's Bjorn, you want to stand up so we can. Bjorn is at the back there, who's an epidemiologist and mycologist. Greg Prendos, who runs the Leaky Building. Addressed a lot of the mitigation issues. Robin Phipps and Nico Bullock from Massey University and others, and Ray Chapman, who's under the cost benefit study. Anybody else who's here? And this wouldn't have seen the light of day without Roger Steele and Matthew Bartlett, who helped in the publication of it, to which we're very grateful. And so, with some trepidation, do you want to just say a few words to kind of...
I can do that when I'm in the run-up, as I'm less accomplished to the book launch, and I'm not very accomplished to public speaking, but it's quite good to be able to launch this book, because it probably has a this genesis in core architecture and building, which is... And it raises the question of how problematic this situation we've found ourselves in. And unfortunately, I got the publication just a couple of days ago, and reading it on my phone was more difficult than I expected. It's not the sort of thing that I'd read on my phone. But I did discover that it was an extremely well-researched publication, and developed some disturbing conclusions of one of the most poorly thought out strategies we have had in recent years in the building industry. And I lament that we have not had the same research prior to leaky building syndrome or afterwards. And unfortunately, you know, there are people like building and material manufacturers and brands who have escaped, you know, some of the brunt of the imposition we have placed on people. So I think it's an extremely important publication and very pertinent to the state, and raises a number of other issues which I've spoken about previously. I think it's a part of a triangle of issues, and this is the best sort of publication really to give rise to some of the ones which have not surfaced as yet in the physical and construction side of the leaky home building syndrome. And I think there's a third element of this triangle, which is the social context of housing. And the three of them should be brought together and encourage someone to actually sort of work on using this publication as a base. A very critical analysis of what happened with the construction industry, and I dare say what happened with the professional fraternity, including the legal fraternity, who have delayed any rectification for so long and not made any decisions, and increased the problems exemplified in this publication. And an opening the door to some of the social problems that we actually have with our own housing without really understanding them, and introducing not new models but ways that people can improve their situation through their own effort rather than the imposed ones of land exploiters and people who build cheap and shoddy buildings. Thank you very much, and I recommend it as a great insight into a subject which most people are not prepared to put pen to paper.
Thank you.